the whole social justice speak that we are living in now in the West, and that you are truly a person of conscience if you're anti-Zionist, came from the exploitation of the Black community.
This is the Babylon Done podcast. It's a podcast for curious people that want to get a deeper understanding about our complex world. And I'm one of the hosts. My name is Johnny Moore. I'm president of JDA Worldwide and the Congress of Christian Leaders. And I am joined by
Joseph D'Souza, the Archbishop of the Good Shepherd Church of India, an Indian based in India and doing ministry all over the world.
Bishop, today we have an super interesting topic and one that isn't spoken about very often.
And that is Israel and Black solidarity, a parallel story. And I'm very intrigued by what we're going to discuss. Israel's struggle for survival certainly shouldn't be news to anyone. The heartbreaking reality of the oppression and discrimination that the Jewish people face is a tale as old as time. Yet amid that struggle, there's another group that faced a parallel struggle, of course. I'm talking about my Black brothers and sisters around the world. In many ways, this shared experience has bound the Black church and the Jewish people together. Though sadly, some continue to try and foment animosity between them. Today, we'll be talking with one of the greatest leaders in the movement to enhance Black solidarity with Israel. It's a unique partnership that, first of all, the global church ought to understand and I think will impact the global church.
Yeah, it's interesting that when you see the pictures of Martin Luther King Jr. marching, he often had with him Rabbi Joshua Abraham Heschel, you know, who's the famous rabbi in New York City. And I think some people think that that's a snapshot in time. But our friend Dunasami Washington doesn't believe that at all. It's not an exception, but it actually was a common part of their community's shared history. He has previously worked for CUFI, Christians United for Israel, as the head of their national diversity outreach. He's the founder of the Institute for Black Solidarity with Israel and has done so many different things, bringing together, particularly in the United States, the Black community with the Jewish community, not just in support of Israel, but also in addressing anti-Semitism and fighting for civil rights for everyone. He's also a pastor and the bishop of the Congregation of Zion in his hometown of Stockton. And his really, really incredible book is called Zionism and the Black Church: Why Standing with Israel Will Be a Defining Issue for Christians of Color in the 21st Century. And we're delighted that he joins us now.
Dumisani, our audience is quite varied and spread out in different parts of the world. And we'd like to introduce our guest to them and ask the simple question, first question to you. Who is Dumisani Washington? What would you answer and tell them?
I'm a husband and father, youngest of seven children, pastor, musician, author, and just someone who loves Israel and the Jewish people, and wants very much to walk out the biblical mandate to stand with Israel, as the Word of God says.
Wow.
Dumisani, your book, Zionism and the Black Church, is one of the most interesting books I've ever read. And I'm like, I read a lot. Like I, my love language is books, and I have a problem with buying books. I mean, I got another box of books at my house while I was traveling, and I'm sure my wife's like, enough with the books already. So I read a lot, but your book is like really, really, really a unique book. Why don't you, tell our audience, first of all, tell us a bit about it, but why you wrote it.
Well, I'll start with the second question first. I wrote it, I began writing it maybe 3 years before it was published. All those people who write know some books take longer, they're just in your head, right? But they were really, it was more and more of what I felt as a need to tell a specific story, right? To tell the story of what Black Zionism meant in terms of how it was seen, how Zionism was seen within the Black church historically,
And again, especially as a musician, which is why music is so much a part of the book, because it tells its own story, as you know. And I felt that it was a story that it needed to be known, both in the Israel space, but also just in the Christian space. There is as I try to talk about, I'll move towards the book itself. No people are a monolith, obviously, so nobody has one story. There's not one Jewish story. There's not one Irish story, none of those things. So, but in even acknowledging that, there is an overarching story when it comes to particularly the Black American from the whole story from slavery and through Jim Crow and everything, and how the God of Israel is woven deeply within the fabric of that story. As a matter of fact, as I tell people, you remove God from that story and it doesn't really exist anymore, right? This is why the greatest abolitionists like Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, these were all devout Christians, right? And they were for a reason. There was a calling on their lives, not only to lead their own communities, but to strengthen America, right? This was actually here's how we bring our contributions to the table, right down to the Black soldiers who fought in the Civil War, right? They're literally fighting for their freedom and fighting for the preservation of the nation. So the reason, it includes, you know, politics and music, not partisan politics, but music, politics, geopolitics, music, the culture, because the... I felt that, and especially when I finally published it in 2014, the first edition, the second one in 2021, adding some other things that we felt needed to be there. I felt there was a story that, first of all, young Black Americans needed to know, but then I felt that the world needed to know, right? Because of the principles. The principles in there are timeless. And I'll just give one quick example. In the huge discussion that is the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, as I try to make the case in the book, no other people have been more exploited than African Americans. And that's arguable, right? You can make a case for other things, but we're saying the whole social justice speak that we are living in now in the West, and that you are truly a person of conscience if you're anti-Zionist, and people have no idea what anti-Zionist or Zionist even means. Much of that came from the exploitation of the Black community, right? Making anti-Zionism a civil rights issue. And fast forward to 2024, and what's going on our campuses all over the West? Israel's apartheid state, lie, Jim Crow state, lie, all those are lies. But they were married in large part to the Black ethos of slavery to freedom, right? This whole capturing this story. And I'll say this last part too, the spiritual dynamic of it is, once again, when you're looking at the Negro spirituals, they're singing Torah. They're singing scripture. All of it's in Joshua and Moses and the whole thing. Why? Because they're believing that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is going to do for them what God did for the Hebrews in the Word of God. So it would be like the enemy to take that and twist it, right? To manipulate it, to make it something else. And if you're a real Black person, you're against Israel because Israel is an apartheid. That type of thing. And has worked effectively on people who don't really understand what's being said to them.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me, like from reading your book and some of your other work, like the civil rights movement and what preceded it was very, very much a Christian movement, and it drew its inspiration from from the story of Israel, you know, from the Exodus of Egypt to, you know, the Abraham, and I mean the whole thing. And yet now we see, you know, we see something different, like some of the conversation around DEI and critical theory and like all of this stuff. You know, that if you read the New York Times, like they treat it like the civil rights movement. It's like just the continuation of the civil rights movement, the next chapter of the civil rights movement. But you seem to argue that it's something totally, totally different. It isn't a new civil rights movement, the extension of it. And it's actually a quite secular type of ideology.
It's interesting that in an organic way, a civil rights movement, if we can use that term, really legitimately begins post-Civil War, right? Because now you have freedom, but you don't have access. I mean, Lincoln signs these proclamations, everything in these amendments to the Constitution, but what happens shortly after that, a whole Jim Crow system is superimposed on the Constitution, and for now the 100 years between the 1860s and 1960s, you have a new fight. So this was actually going on long before Dr. King comes on the scene. There's always this debate about who are Black Americans real citizens if they are being denied X, Y, and Z, right? While they're distinguishing themselves in all these other wars, the First World War, the Second World War, right? They're out there suffering, bleeding, and dying like everybody else, but they're coming home as second-class citizens, right? So it was always an issue. But again, it was never about their patriotism. It was about we hold these truths to be self-evident, to be that all men are created equal, right? So to your point, Reverend, what happens is that people with nefarious intentions, whether they're communists who are trying to destroy America, whether they're anti-Zionists who are trying to destroy Israel, and the black community is not unique in that. They would use whatever conflict anywhere in the world, right? But it became of such lore when it became black Americans, right? Because they, rightly or wrongly, as I tell young black people, say rightly or wrongly, you represent liberty to certain people, right? Whether you want to claim it or not, that's much of what goes on. So you're right, Reverend. What happened is that people get drawn to that to exploit it for all of their reasons, right? And the PLO, Palestine Liberation Organization, is no different, but they were probably the classic one, right? I mean, they're probably the heavyweight champion of the world when it comes to exploitation, right? They exploited the Palestinians, exploited the black people, exploited Native Americans. They don't care. They exploit everybody to get paid, right? Because these guys are billionaires, right? And to act like they want an end, quote unquote, to the occupation. It's amazing how Abu Mazen has a huge, I don't know how many square foot the house is in Judea and Samaria, worth 12 point something million dollars, but he wants to enter the occupation. No, it's the ultimate grift, right? So that became the issue, that people would exploit that story. Unfortunately, black people and non-black people, you have other black leaders, unfortunately, who would rise up, the Louis Farrakhans, the Jesse Jacksons. They'll talk all that justice stuff, but then they'll either come out with the anti-Semitic stuff or the anti-white or the anti-America stuff, which had nothing to do with the real fight to be citizens and to love this country and all of those things. So yeah, I'll say this last thing. I love Dr. Robert Woodson of the Woodson Center. He came out their curriculum several years ago called 1776 Unites as a response to the 1619 project by Hannah Nicole Jones. And it is a celebration of black Americans who made all these huge contributions to the nation as black people and who they are, why they need to be known. And it is done in the spirit of patriotism. And that has been the fight, if you will, ideologically, not so much just in the black community, but around it. Who gets to claim this legacy, which is why Israel haters love using those terms. Zionism is racism. They love using those terms because it makes them feel legitimate.
In terms of how the narrative has changed, Dumisani, can you point to any particular black thought leaders who got co-opted into this anti-Semitism and took black freedom and black emancipation struggle, which is a legitimate struggle which everybody would support, and then twisted it around? Who are the? I know the liberal communist left white people. I know who they are. I don't know about who are the thought leaders among the black who created this narrative, because of which, and this confusion right now.
Well, the creators of it, if we use that term, and I talk about this in my book a little bit, it would probably begin with a figure like a Jesse Jackson, who then, he was a young man when Dr. King was assassinated. He was one of Dr. King's proteges, one of many, obviously. And Dr. King, of course, very pro-Israel, very outspoken, and the vast majority of the civil rights movement as well, right? As a matter of fact, in 1975, Dr. King's former colleagues, now he's assassinated already, but BASIC is a 1975 organization that's formed by Black Americans to Stand with Israel. It stands for Black Americans to Support Israel Committee, right? History has buried it, right? But this is actually Dyad Russin, A. Philip Randolph, Coretta Scott King, Daddy King, you name it. Roy Campanella, Leontine Price, the opera singer. Who's who of the black community in terms of politics, science, art, you name it. They stood flat-footed and said, we stand with Israel and the Jewish people. So it was around the time when Jesse Jackson calls himself a peacemaker, flies to Israel, stands in Ramallah, and there's a very famous picture. People who are listening right now, Google right now, Jesse Jackson, Yasser Arafat. You'll see a 1975, 76 picture, circa 19, late 70s. They're standing there hugging. Yasser Arafat has the Cheshire Cat grin, right? Because it's very clear what he's doing. Jesse Jackson has a stoic look, but he's doing, it's a photo op, right? It's straight exploitation. And why is Jesse Jackson there? To bring peace. And he's doing that equivocation, peace on quote unquote both sides. Of course, it's the PLO that's attacking the Israelis. It's not the other way around. The Israelis are trying to defend themselves just like now. It would start with him, because he began to talk about it in terms of a black liberation thing, but it goes much further beyond this. So if you're talking about contemporary, that would be everything from the Cornel West to the Mark Lamont Hills to the, and I could go on. I mean, heck, Candace Owens, who's on the right, but she's still anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, and they're doing it particularly on the left. as a black liberation theme. They are attempting to get people to believe that somehow this is a legacy where the black community is concerned, and nothing could be further from the truth. They are completely distorting reality.
Very good, very good. And I know Cornel West and all the names you mentioned.
Yes, yeah. Sir.
And I've just been wondering recently about Candace Owens and some of her speeches.
To your point, she doesn't so much do it from a black standpoint, but she does do it from a Christian standpoint. If you are a real Christian, then you're against Israel committing genocide. All the same talking points from the left, she just does it as America first.
America as a Christian, how can you allow that? But
I mean, one of the most like remarkable things about Israel to me, and I could, you know, been there many, many times, I go there every year, is that, you know, Israel's actually a diverse country. I mean, I think if you ask the average, like, you know, and I this is more for you to judge than me, but like, you know, I think if you ask the average young person in, you know, New York City or Los Angeles or someplace, like, they would say, like, you know, Israel is like a country of white Europeans, you know, that left Europe after the Holocaust and they settled in the Middle East amidst a bunch of brown people. And yet, you know, it's like they're Ethiopian Jews, like majority of Israel, you know, Jews in Israel, like came from North African Muslim countries, Yemenites. There's like 20% of the country's Arab, for goodness sake. Like, you know, like is that how do you think about that? I mean, is that how you see things?
It's funny. You know, actually, I totally agree with it. So you have, yes, most people, if they have any concept of it in the West, especially in the United States, they will see it as what you described it, as whites. Then they'll use all the other pejoratives, settler, colonizer, imperialist. It's what's interesting is that they will often use those terms. I don't know what percentage, I couldn't do it scientifically, because of the disinformation, right? So I'll take people back to 1968, 10 days before Dr. King's death. One of his last meetings is with the Rabbinical Assembly. And the reason I do that is people can Google this too as well, rabbinicalassembly.org. We have the transcripts. There was no Twitter or nothing like that back there, but we had, you know, people actually wrote down transcripts. And the question was posed to Dr. King the same way that you're saying it now. They were seeing for the first time, put that to give some context, the rabbis who had partnered with Dr. King in the civil rights movement. This is like, again, this was post civil rights legislation. Again, this is 68, shortly before the end of his life. And they are concerned, the rabbis are, with the younger black militant movement, right? Because the Angela Davises now, they're the young people on the scene. Stokely Carmichael, who changes his name to Kwame Ture. Eldridge Cleaver, Black Panthers, right? They're seeing this. And again, for our Jewish brothers and sisters, they know what anti-Semitism is. They've been seeing it for millennia. They'd never seen it coming from black people. It was blowing their mind. They had never seen this before. This was a new phenomenon for them, right? Anti-Zionism, anti-Semitism coming out of this you know, radical friends of the black community. And they asked Dr. King, and one of the questions posed to him was, and I can almost quote it verbatim by now, Dr. King, quote, what would you say if you were talking to a Negro intellectual, an editor of a national magazine, if I have been, and you were told that he supported Israel because he supported the Arabs against the Israelis? In his opinion, the Israelis are white Europeans, and the Arabs are what he called that old Oriental, that the Oriental type of term that they would use back in the day. And here again, my point, 1968, he's asking Dr. King the same thing you're saying, Reverend John. He's going, he even says, even though the majority of Israel are Arab or of you know, Middle Eastern descent, he's basically saying, Dr. King, I'm trying to wrap my brain around what's being said. And here's my point, my bottom line point, I'm a long-winded preacher, that disinformation is 60 years old almost. So again, it started back then.
Wow.
I believe it was Gamal Nasser, the president of Egypt, premier. He was quoted as saying, although I don't have the source, you Jews left black and came back white. He was tapping into the disinformation. He knew full well who the Jews were. There were 85,000 Jews living in Egypt at the time that he said that, right? And he knew they went back to the time of the Bible. So he knows it's a lie, but it was a lie they were pushing to the West. And unfortunately, as we know, many in the West didn't know much about the Middle East. So they were saying what other people, fast forward to right now, they'll say Israel is a white settler colonial. That is old, old propaganda formed by the KGB. And it worked so well. And if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? So they keep going back to that over and over and over.
Yeah, you know, every time someone says like Israel's a apartheid state or whatever, I always remind them that it was an Arab judge that put a Jewish prime minister in prison. An Arab judge was the chief justice of the Supreme Court. You've ever been to a hospital in Israel, you know, I've been many times, like your doctor's probably Arab, your nurse is probably Arab. I mean, it's and all those Arabs in Israel have equal rights. But yeah, there is just so much disinformation and misinformation. And, you know, you've done an amazing job of telling the whole story. What are other things that people don't know that they should know about this?
For us in our organization right now, I think that Reverend, everybody that the one of the most important things I think now, right? There's so many different things that are happening at one time. I think one of the most important things that people in the West need to know, whether they're Christian or not, in the midst of the disinformation, one of the things that has consistently been the case, and we've seen this, you know, just in the records and everything, that not only is Israel demonized, right? Not only is Israel accused of all everything from apartheid to Jim Crow to genocide to you name it. Not only is that whole thing's not true, but there are nefarious actors attempting to destroy Israel, chief among them Islamist, radical Islamist forces. Chief among those would be what I call the Third Reich of today, the Islamic Republic of Iran. See, while people are kind of squirreling around about whether or not Israel's committing genocide, Iran is actually stoking genocide. I mean, you don't get an October the 7th without Iran helping Hamas, because Hamas is a proxy of Iran. Hezbollah is a proxy of Iran. The Houthis is a proxy of Iran. That doesn't get discussed, not to mention the fact that Iran's influence in our government and in our schools and in our education, these things are being taught. That's one of the things that I found that's the most interesting. I hate to go back to this again, but let me use an example. Dennis Prager wrote a 30-something page letter to Candace Owens talking about, this is not about Candace Owens, people, I'm not bashing, I'm just using this example because it's one of the examples. He writes to her about all the anti-Semitic things that she's been doing. He just breaks his heart because they're very, very close. And one of the things that we pointed out on there, he says to her, you say that I'm paraphrasing because he says it much more eloquently than me. You say that you're concerned about Christian genocide. He said about Christians and genocide. He said, but the only group that's actually committing genocide like that are Muslims. He said, but you say you will never talk about that, right? You're concerned about Christians. You're concerned about America first, but you're not actually talking about what's going on with Christians in Sudan or in Libya or in Syria or right, on and on and on, right? And who's the main culprit? And not only killing Christians, they're killing other Muslims. They're actually slaughtering other Muslims. And this is one of the things that I found that's completely fascinating. It's part of the spiritual warfare. That once they step into the pool of anti-Semitism, they become blind about everything else that's going on, including in our own nation. You have Hamas supporters who hate Israel and America burning American flags in New York and in Chicago and L.A. Even the America Firsters don't have anything to say about it. Nothing. It's just Israel. We need the America Firsters who want us to stop giving military aid to Israel, but we don't care about military aid to Hamas, right? To Iran. No conversations around that. That's what's amazing to me. So in long answer to that question, I think that one of the most important things here today for people to know, especially Christians in terms of we wrestle not against flesh and blood, that if you recognize that the hatred for Israel is also blinding us to a real Islamist threat, not just the Red-Green Alliance, a communist threat, and an Islamist threat that's trying to destroy this country, not just Israel, this country. The Jew haters are so wrapped up in their Jew hatred, they don't even see that their own country is on fire.
Thank you. I mean, I was thinking as you're talking about Candace, and I listened to that particular excerpt where she says, I don't want to talk about the Muslims and this and that. And I thought, man, she's so ill-informed. The primary killers and genocidal actors against Christians worldwide, and she is a Christian, are this extremist Islam. And if you're not speaking about this and you only want to talk about this, there is some dissonance going on there, and I pray for my sister. But the question that I have is related to the whole issue of how even the struggle against race that we've all been part of is again taken and twisted, and Israel or Jews are called racist, while the most racist communities, nobody talks about it and nobody will raise it, are these extremist Islamic societies around the world. There is so much of racism within Africa among their communities. There is racism in Iran. There is racism. They don't talk about their internal racism while they just take the black issue and then they want to attack Israel for that. You know, so there is an hypocrisy in not being consistent. If you want to talk about race and critical race theory, okay, then let's talk about these societies where tribal racism is rampant and how they treat each other. Why don't you address that? And it's not that racism just began in America. It's been all over, though. It's been there in India for 2,000 years. Why don't we talk about that?
And why Dunasamy, is race like such a, on the other side, like why is race always like such a topic of conflict, like political conflict, division? Like what is this like just a function of American politics? Like why are we always talking about, you know, about race?
Frederick Douglass was the first one who coined the term color line. Of course, he was born as a slave, right? He became an abolitionist and everything and saw the emancipation and everything. And then it was that Robert Woodson said that slavery was America's original birth defect. I want to put this in context. America, when it was a slave nation, was one of many throughout the West, right? And not to mention this still slavery, as you said, still 1,400-year-old slave trade, this trans-Saharan slave trade, still exists today. So what's amazing, in answer to the question, I think that it becomes this amazing. Here you have the United States of America, probably the least racist nation on the planet. We're going to talk about relative, right? The nation, every nation, tribe, kindred, and tongue, if I could borrow from the Book of Revelation, right, are here in this nation, multi-ethnic, multi-religious, and somehow we're still strong, even though we're struggling at the moment, right? But we're strong and the blessing of God on it, right? So clearly you can come here, be born and raised here, be different colors, different whatever, and achieve whatever. And again, there's no nation is perfect. You'd be hard-pressed to find one in which there's more of a meritocracy that exists in the United States of America. I believe that America's enemies have focused on that as a weak point in that they would stoke all types of resentment, anger, bitterness, right? The disinformation along with that, right? So every disparity has to be race. We talked about that quite a bit. Somehow if you walk into a room and there's only 5% black people employees, somehow that's racist. They, without really going deeper and say, okay, who applied, why, what's going on, what else is happening other than the color of somebody's skin? I believe that Israel's enemies, particularly when you talk about the disinformation from the Soviet Union, they've consistently attempted to use that and to stoke those types of things to fray the nation. And I'll say this last thing. Booker T. Washington is the one who said around 1911, I believe it was, the turn of the century, he was then talking about how race was being used as a money scheme. He talked about those, and he used this term. He said there's a certain type of Negro, now we can apply this to anybody, it's about a Negro who said basically who always hold the struggles in front instead of the accomplishments because he wants to get paid. Fast forward to, I don't care if it's a Robin DiAngelo or if it's an Ibrahim X. Kendi, whatever, it pays. It pays money to have race grievances and have bleeding hearts. Give me money for my nonprofit so I can talk about we can overcome, even though I am hard pressed to find the racism that I swear is there, because money is the root of the love of money is the root of all evil. You have people who know that they can make money by pulling at the heartstrings of other people. Look at these poor black kids. Look at these poor Latino kids. What you need to do is give me money and I'll fix it. They have no intention of fixing anything. Let me say this one last thing. This is how the PLO exploited the Palestinian people. They did not care about liberation or anything. When Yasser Arafat figured that he could get multinational organizations to give money to him to free Palestine, my God, that's why he died with billions. That's why the three top leaders of Hamas, I think two of whom are dead now, were worth $11 billion. Why? They figured out a long time ago, if I play this song and play this violin and not try to fix anything that may actually be there, people will give me money. And I think that that's another the reason you have them using that as a disinformation tool. And as you guys said earlier, the New York Times will play along, MSNBC will play, they'll put it on the front pages all the time if it sells that leftist anti-America, anti-Israel narrative. And that's how it ties into Israel. They do the same thing. If America's a racist nation and Israel is its greatest ally, well, surely Israel's is a racist nation, which is why it's committing genocide against the brown people and yada, yada. I think it's about money.
Dunasamy, you are a courageous leader and incredible, incredible spokesperson. And your book, as I've already said, is really a must read. And you know, I thank you for doing that. I mean, you speak. You're a truth speaker, and sometimes that's a lonely place. But as a courageous leader, you're right there at the home with truth. And we thank you for spending some time with us today.
Dumisani, I'm very, very proud of you. You know, I lead a justice struggle, and I know exactly where you're coming from, and the way you speak, the way you articulate. I look forward to getting to know you after this thing. I have downloaded your book, have begun reading it, but I am going to be distributing your book among a lot of Indian intellectuals, because what is fed to them is the left progressive propaganda. And they use the black story, they use the race story, and I'm saying, no, that's not true. But you see, I needed a black voice also to come alongside me. And so now I feel I found a partner.
Bishop Dumisani Washington is a courageous, courageous leader. I mean, so much of what he said to us is almost forbidden. Yeah, you get canceled in elite circles for what he said. But, you know, what he said is true.
So the thing is, truth is truth. Now that not just the Americans, but the blacks, us, I'm talking in terms of race, not the white, are adding our voices to this. Ever since October 7th happened, opens a completely new door. Because the propaganda has been profound,
and I'm really glad he brought up a lot of history there. Because you go read this stuff. I mean, Yasser Arafat, who you mentioned a few times, when Anwar Sadat, the president of Egypt, was giving a speech in Parliament, and he said, "I will even go to Jerusalem and speak at the Knesset if I could bring peace." This is before peace between Egypt and Israel. Yasser Arafat was visiting the Egyptian Parliament that day, and he actually stood up and applauded when Anwar Sadat said that. And then later on, when Anwar Sadat actually made peace with Israel, Yasser Arafat rejected it. And the truth definitely is something we as Christians ought to care more about, and the truth will set us free.
Thank you for joining us today for Babel Undone. If this conversation had you thinking, then why don't you share it with someone else? For more episodes of Babel Undone or other amazing content that helps Christians live out their faith, you should head over to premier.plus. That's Premier, P-R-E-M-I-E-R, for the Americans listening in, .plus.